KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Donald Trump's election was met with projections of gloom and doom from many market analysts. The conventional wisdom was that Trump's anti-immigration and protectionist policies could trigger a global recession. But the stock market has defied predictions, soaring almost 25% since the presidential election. In this segment, we're going to talk about what is behind this rapid rise and whether we're due for a major correction and have a look at the global picture as well. Let me tell you who is joining us. I want to welcome Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall, who teaches value investing at Stanford and at the Stockholm School of Economics in Sweden and asset management at UC Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Michael, good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. I ought to mention your book here, too. It's called Good Stocks Cheap, Value Investing with Confidence for a Lifetime of Stock Market Outperformance. Kate Warren also joins us this segment. She's investment strategist at Edward Jones Investments. And Kate Warren, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Let me begin with you, Kate Warren, and let's begin by talking about, what puzzles many people, that is the fact that the market has thrived and is continuing to thrive. In fact, is really quite bullish, to put it mildly, and investing is very bullish as well. So we've got lower taxes on being promised with the tax cut. We've got less regulation, and we've got infrastructure promises in terms of spending. That's just part of the picture, though. I think there's more to be said about why the market is doing so well. I'd like to hear from you on that.
Yes, I actually think that it has more to do with the fact we're seeing synchronized global growth, and it's faster growth in the rest of the world that I think is really helping U.S. economic growth, in addition to the regulatory relief, which we've seen some of in the U.S., and as you said, optimism about tax cuts and other changes that many people think will mean more money in their pocket and many companies think will mean better earnings. I'd make one other point, which is that earnings were stronger in 2017 than I think most expected, and that was largely due to the fact that we saw a rebound in oil prices, so energy earnings picked up, and a lower value to the U.S. dollar. That meant that earnings for companies in the rest of the world, or global companies that operate other places, actually were stronger as well. So I think a lot of it had to do with other things besides the change in the administration.
And Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall, it's up here, but it's an all-time record also in terms of markets abroad. We're talking about the U.K. and Canada, South Korea, Taiwan, low unemployment rates. Is this the boom before the bust, perhaps?
Well, you know, it's always so difficult to predict when you're actually going to have a stock market crash of some sort. In fact, if a crash is predicted, it's not really a crash. It has to be unexpected by definition. But you can't really tell. I mean, I think Kate's basically right in the causes behind what seems to be an inexplicable rise in stock price levels. I think there was a huge belief that regulations were going to get dropped, which would increase corporate earnings. I think that there was a huge belief that the corporate tax rates were going to get cut, which would lead to a huge rise in corporate earnings. And, of course, interest rates continue to be quite low. And so money is a raw material for a lot of businesses. And so their borrowing costs have stayed relatively low for the time being. And that seems to be behind it. But it's always difficult to say exactly what's responsible for some sort of broad stock market move that seems to be kind of hard to explain.
Well, you mentioned the interest rates, and just yesterday, Janet Yellen came out with a statement, and this is her final act, in fact, as head of the Fed, to make the quarter point 1.25 up to 1.5, and she's being replaced by Jerome Powell, who went along with that. What kind of effect do you see there?
Well, when you see a rise in interest rates, you will, very generally speaking, and on average and over time, see corporate earnings not grow like they might otherwise would for a couple reasons. When interest rates rise, borrowed money gets more expensive for corporations, which adds a cost. But in addition, fixed income investing can become more attractive than equity investing. In other words, bonds that weren't so attractive before interest rates went up might command some more investment allocation, and equity might get less. So you could see stock prices drop. But that's how that generally works. It's very difficult to predict the timing of such things, but that would be behind it.
And Kate Warren, we recall perhaps the fact that Janet Yellen, in response to the talk about growth, and there's a lot of talk about growth now with the tax bill, but President Trump was saying it should be 4%, and she called that challenging. It was a seems to be a circumspect word. But when we're looking at growth, we really have to take into account the fact that we may be facing some inflation here, too, isn't we?
Yes, and I would say two things, that overall we could see a quarter or two of 4% maybe, but that's certainly not likely to be the longer-term growth trajectory, even with the anticipated corporate and personal tax cuts. More importantly, as you were just suggesting, and as we just heard, yes, short-term interest rates have gone up, but long-term interest rates, the 10-year Treasury, which is really the rate that your mortgage or your car loan is tied to, have been flat. And in fact, they were down earlier in the year. So long-term interest rates have actually come down a bit. And that's part of the reason that money has stayed cheap. That's helped drive corporate earnings, but it's also made it easier for people to borrow. If we see stronger economic growth, it could lead to higher wage growth that could participate or lead to higher inflation. And that might mean the Fed raises rates more quickly in 2018. Than everyone's expecting. We don't think that's likely to happen, but that's the fear, which is, you know, and the reason to watch interest rates and inflation as much as you watch the stock market to figure out what's going to happen next. If we see higher inflation, the Fed moves more quickly. If we see lower inflation, as Janet Yellen suggested yesterday, then we could actually see the Fed not do as many short-term interest rate hikes as currently expected. But that would also probably mean lower growth than what we're expecting right now.
Kate Warren is an investment strategist at Edward Jones Investment. Kenneth, Jeffrey Marshall teaches value investing at Stanford and at the Stockholm School of Economics in Sweden, and asset management at UC Berkeley, sort of a circuit-riding teacher in many ways, even abroad. Let me go back to you, though, Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall, about something that Kate Warren mentioned, and that is the decline of the dollar. That has to be seen in this whole picture, plus just overall slow productivity. I mean, the United States really has a great economic gap, which has also been mentioned. And what about our revenue base in all this?
Well, you know, betting against U.S. growth long term has historically been a pretty bad bet. I mean, you talk about the circuit that I run in my teaching. I do get to spend a great deal of the year outside of the United States and to interact with businesses and students in Scandinavia and elsewhere in Europe. And I can tell you, the sort of dynamism that we have in the United States is really still unparalleled. And I'm comparing this to places like Sweden and Norway, countries with plenty of entrepreneurial spirit, but it's somehow different and more powerful in the U.S. So when we start to talk about the long-term prospects for the American economy, I have absolutely no concerns whatsoever. I have no idea what's going to happen next quarter or half a year from now or even 2 years from now, but long-term, I have absolutely no doubt.
You believe in sustained economic growth. I mean, very strongly.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think anybody that sees these different economies function and the people that are coming up through the different educational systems who ultimately will come to run the businesses in those economies, I don't think you could reach a different conclusion. We just have something special in the market system that we have in the United States that seems to work very well.
Yeah, but we also have this tremendous chasm between have and have not. And, we, you know, there's some people who say maybe we need a new economic foundation or something along those lines.
Yeah, you're right. And that's actually one of the things that I think is causing a lot of Americans some consternation now, is with some policies that seem to be coming down the pike, it just seems sort of incorrect to start with a base of great income and net worth disparity and to somehow increase that gap by changing the rules such that the already wealthy get wealthier and others find themselves in a compromised situation. I think that that's – my thoughts on that are more as a citizen than as an investor. But quite frankly, I think that's where the sentiment should be.
Well, we're talking about investing and the stock market, and we do want to hear from you. And let me tell you how you can join this conversation with any questions or comments that you might have. You can call us toll-free at 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so feel free to join the program by dialing in at 866-733-6786. You can also bring questions or comments to the forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting them there, kqed.org/forum, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. And let me go to some comments and questions here. Mitko, go to you on this. Kate Warren says, I pulled a lot of money out of stocks after the elections last year due to Trump promises to stop immigration and protectionist measures. Why was I wrong to do that?
Well, I would say the main mistake was to think that immigration changes, which we've actually seen, and trade disruptions would be the main themes. As it turned out, they seem to be the main things that President Trump talks about, but the actions have been much more pro-growth than I think the rhetoric suggested. So interesting enough, immigration, the restructuring and the limits are likely to lower growth rates longer term. So while I entirely agree with Jeffrey that we're going to see a continued pace of economic growth and dynamism, and especially the likelihood of more small business creation, which tends to be one of the sources of growth we haven't seen so much of. I'd say in terms of the mistake, it was paying more attention to what Trump said rather than the actions taken. And the actions combined with the faster growth in the rest of the world have really been the reason stocks have done so well and are likely to keep doing well, at least short term.
Well, what about President Trump coming out during the campaign? Again, maybe this is the difference between what he said and what he's doing. He was talking very much about, we got out of TPP. We sort of reconfigured the whole trade operation globally, at least according to what he wanted to do, as opposed to maybe what he has done.
I would say he's done less on that than many people expected. And your questioner is correct that if he'd done more, it would have been more disruptive. But originally, he was going to label China a currency manipulator. He didn't do that, having figured out that trade between China and the U.S. is actually pretty important for the U.S. as well as for China. I would say one of the big risks in that area right now is the whole NAFTA negotiations, because North America has done a very good job of integrating the production and the sales of goods, and that could be a disruption, but it may not disrupt the stock market nearly as much as people are thinking, because I think companies are pretty flexible. They've learned to adjust to surprises, and while certainly the policy changes are uncertainties and risks, I don't think it undoes the fundamental improvement in earnings and economic growth that we're seeing and likely to continue to see, although I would caution not at the pace that we saw in 2017.
Now, a listener raises a question, and some of you who are listening may want to respond to this. Wants to know if the stock market rise reflects more confidence in Trump's leadership. You want to opine on that, Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall?
Oh, I don't mind opining on it, but I don't know that I have anything useful to say. I think that it was much more straightforward than confidence in a particular individual. I think it had to do with an expectation of lower tax rates and an expectation of lower regulation. But to the question that came in earlier, if I may, the question essentially was I wrong to take money out of the stock market once the outcome of the election was decided? You know, betting against the stock market in the United States has historically been a miserable idea. If you look at the different things that one could put wealth in, cash, bonds, real estate, copper, stocks, it's stocks that over time and on average do best. In my lifetime, the average annual return from the S&P 500, a standard index for stock market behavior, has been about 10%. Everything else has done worse. And what's very impossible to do is to time exactly when the market's going to spike and to time exactly when it's going to plummet. So I think what smart individual investors and households tend to do is not react so strongly to specific political or macroeconomic events, but rather keep the long term in mind, because after all, it's the long term that they're probably going to live for.
A listener named Carl tweets, with relatively stable capital markets, do you see a rebirth of the long bond?
The question is to me?
Yeah, Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall.
Well, generally speaking, you know, bonds tend not to deliver as well as stocks do. They sort of deliver returns that are midway between cash and equities. So while it's conceivable that an increase in interest rates could cause the returns from bonds to go higher than they are now, they still, over the long term, are not going to do anywhere near as well as equities.
All right, let me bring some callers on here. Ron, you're first up, and by the way, you can join us at 866-733-6786. Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's good evidence that trickle-down is clever economic policy, but it doesn't really generate better results. Bubble-up economic policy, more like Eisenhower had, where you increase the purchasing power of the average consumer, causes more customers to be available and more purchasing power, since the consumer segment of the economy is like more than 60% of purchasing. Also, you know, the economic disparity between the highest earners and the lowest earners diminishes motivation and incentive. It's an incredible engine that we have in America when people are motivated across the board, and not so in, you know, broad communist countries where they don't feel they have the opportunity for upward mobility. So I think if you think about trickle down, you should also think about water trying to get under a redwood tree. You wouldn't stand under a redwood tree to get a drink of water. In reality, the Democrats have not been good at putting good rhetoric to their policy suggestions, not at all as well as the Republicans have. The death tax, for instance, talks about something kind of scary to the average person, when in reality, you could demonstrate that giving tax breaks to people who make $10 million a year will increase the number of 100-foot yachts that are sold, but it won't really increase the number of Levi's that get purchased.
No, Ron, you're bringing up some good economic theory, and let me actually go, Kate Warner, you to begin with here. He's talking about trickle-down, and certainly this new tax bill has a lot of trickle-down elements in it economically, as opposed to bubble-up. Interesting. Makes me think of a number of carbonated drinks. But, Kate, let me hear what you have to say.
I would say that certainly you want policy that creates better incentives, and some of the current proposed changes that look like they'll go into effect over the next couple of weeks have good incentives and some don't. So I would agree that, you know, no, trickle down doesn't work all that well. But what you're looking for is exactly what I think Ron said in the second part, which is you want people to feel that if they work harder, they get more and they're able to succeed. And I think that some of the changes that are getting proposed in this legislation have exactly that kind of component, and that'll help the dynamism and help the future growth in a way that simply saying, well, we need to redistribute to narrow the gap between the wealthy and the poor doesn't do. So that to me is the big positive in this. I think a lot of the rest of it, you're absolutely correct about, doesn't necessarily create better incentives and doesn't lead to more income by those who spend more of it.
Yeah, we got the big question here, Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall, about wages and how wages are going to stabilize or go up, and they haven't been going up.
Well, I certainly don't have a prediction on the general movement of wages. What I liked very much in Ron's comment was the suggestion that if you really want to stimulate consumer spending, what you do is you make more of people's wages available for spending. There's been proposals floated at various times to reduce the payroll tax, which is the complete opposite of a trickle-down approach. Reducing the payroll taxes would be a very intelligent thing to do. I mean, that's so clear. And why we haven't pursued that with greater seriousness, I don't quite understand. When you have someone, if you have a family in the Bay Area of two children, and they have a household income of $100,000, $120,000 a year, they're going to spend all of that just to make it in the Bay Area. If you could make more of that gross pay of $120,000 available to them by cutting the payroll tax, all of that additional after-tax income would get spent. And that would be a very intelligent way to stimulate things, much better than trickle-down.
Well, since I mentioned wages, David has something on that score to say. David, welcome. You're on the air.
Okay. First of all, you know, jobs. Let's not be misdirected here, folks. It's wages. Let's get real. They've been going down and stagnating. That's what's happening. Second of all, now, I was a day trader back in the 60s. And I was, back then we were called gunslingers, and we traded on volume. And I'm going to put forth this proposition as to why the market's moving right now. I have not checked insider trading, but I'm willing to bet you a dollar against a donut that they've all, since Trump got in, they had their accountants approximating what they figured they were going to get back in cash if they could pull back through here. And they're already taking that money and buying their own stocks back. right here, right now, and I'm willing to wager on that. That's just my commentary.
All right. I thank you for the comment, and we'll let it stand as an editorial comment, and let's either of our guests, Kate Warner or Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall, wants to respond. All right. We'll move on then. Actually, I've got a lot of questions, and let me go to them from listeners. Here's Marte who wants to know, let me go to you on this, Kenneth. How much are we still benefiting from a market much repaired since the meltdown of 2007-2009?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, we might be in the late stages of benefiting from that. You know, what happens during a serious recession is that companies get very slim. They get much more efficient of necessity. Their access to capital markets isn't as strong. Their free cash flow is down. Their profitability is down. So they trim the fat very well. And so once economic growth returns, they participate in that with a much leaner ship. And so entering new growth phases, the companies exhibit tremendous productivity, which would roughly be calculated by profit per employee. And then after the years go on, things get better. They start to get fat again. They've lost that lean efficiency. And so we could be in the late stages of that.
Productivity is low, though. Isn't that a problem?
Well, that could be an indicator of the late stage that I'm referring to.
Okay. And let me go back, if I may, to you, Kate Warren. Kate Warren, again, investment strategist at Edward Jones Investments. Jeb writes, is there any merit to the idea that global political instability leads to increased investment in U.S. equities by foreign investors who want to put their money in a country that has the military might to defend their investments?
Well, we are seeing some foreign investors put money into the U.S., I think largely because they continue to see the U.S. as a source of returns in the future. But I don't think it's so much the military might there. Taking a look at political instability, that, interestingly enough, has sort of been ignored by investors this year. I think many of us thought that political instability in many parts of the world would lead to more volatility in markets. And instead, stocks have gone up not just in the U.S., but around the rest of the world. And people are feeling more confident in the equity returns, the stock market returns, not just in the U.S., but elsewhere as well. So, yes, some people are diversifying their portfolios into the U.S., but others are saying, no, the opportunities really lie here at home, where the economic cycle isn't quite as far advanced. So I would say some of each of that. There's not really a clear answer to your question to come back around. But I'd say part of the message right now is even for U.S. investors, diversifying internationally is a good move. Yes, we like the U.S., but we also think that the rest of the world is a little behind in the economic cycle and that good returns lie there after those returns being disappointing for a few years.
Still faced with the decline of the dollar, though, unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier. But I want to get to something else with you, Kate Warren, and that is something you've pointed out about the need to create ladders of success, about jobs that can pay decently. And behind that is the importance of education.
Yes, and I think that's critical when you look at the job market. Somebody suggested it was not wages, or not jobs, but wages. But if you look at where the higher wages are, they tend to also be for people who have skills or more education. So there is sort of a parallel between the high unemployment rates of those without a high school degree versus the low unemployment rates of those with a college degree, and the higher wages we're seeing in those more highly educated workers. And that's also where many companies are saying they need skills and they can't find the people with those skills. So I think one of the things that will help the dynamism of the U.S. economy and help create those better jobs is figuring out a way for workers to gain the skills that are needed in what is clearly a fast-changing job market. We're already seeing companies set up training programs, so they're not paying more, but what they're trying to do is bring in people and give them the skills, which to me gets them on the ladder of success that will help them not only today but in the future.
And let me read a tweet from a listener named Patty who writes, the stock market fluctuates regardless of who's in the White House. Corporations post profits and losses based on their products. Brings up another question, and let me go to you on this, Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall. Are we at the point where the market is topping out? Is it overvalued?
Well, I can't tell. Nobody can. And I think that folks that endeavor to time the market, generally you wind up with lower overall investment returns than those that simply invest for the long term. You know, there's uncertainty now. There's uncertainty always. But smart households and individual investors always do the same thing. They tend to invest in the asset classes that perform best, and that tends to be publicly traded stocks. And when they buy those stocks, they make sure that what they're buying are companies that they understand, that are good, that is, that have strong historic profitability, shareholder-friendly policies, look good for the future. And they only buy those companies when they're inexpensive. When you put together an investment portfolio with stocks in companies with those characteristics, you don't care that much about near-term fluctuations. You don't care that much about volatility. The sort of screaming headlines that you see in the business pages of the newspaper become almost amusing because they're so irrelevant to you. And so the right thing to do long-term always seems to be the same thing.
What do you think could be done, and I'm talking about United States now, the government, to strengthen the economy for middle class and poor people?
Well, the proposal to cut the payroll tax has been floated. That seems to me to be an eminently sensible thing. And I'm quite confident that the folks that, you know, see the payroll tax take a big chunk of their gross income will take every penny of the amount they save by that and spend it. It's going to go right back into the economy. It's going to get multiplied, and I think it would be a big boost. That's one thing. Another thing would be, you know, essentially to lower the cost of higher education. You know, in Sweden, where I spend a great deal of time, there's no such thing as tuition. Now, that may be something that's a bit too far removed from what the United States wants, and understandably so. The U.S. and Sweden are different. But the suggestion that someone should have to pay undergraduate tuition of something like $20,000 or $30,000 a year would seem to go against this ladder of success that Kate very nicely talks about, whereby folks see education as the way up.
Kate, let me give you a final question from Christine, who says, why shouldn't I take my money out of the stock market and put it in cash so that I can retain the earnings? Long term, the market will crash and I will lose a lot of these earnings. Since Trump administration is so volatile politically, doesn't it make sense to pull out now?
Well, I actually think that's the wrong strategy. And Kenneth actually talked about that earlier, which is over time, the stock market has been the best source of returns compared to other asset classes. And that's even with what I guess Christina said in terms of crashes. In other words, yes, the market goes up and down. It's volatile. But as one of the other questioners said, basically it doesn't rely much on politics. It's really tied to the underlying strength of the economy, which also goes through cycles, and to company earnings. So putting your money into the stock market, realizing that it goes up and down unpredictably over time, but that trend is higher, and that's one of the best ways to make sure that in the future you've got the money you need to retire or to send your kids to college or to do whatever it else it is that you're trying to accomplish in the future.
We're going to let it stand there.
Putting your money in Instead of putting your money in cash, make sure you're still investing in the future of the U.S.
Right. Thank you, Kate Warren. Thank you, Kenneth Jeffrey Marshall. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.